Welcome to the Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour, an editorial review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on democracy in the Bible, right after this. Well, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Law in the Scripture? And how many laws has our government, our state, and national governments given us in our secular government? Well, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. The state, at last count, has given us 2.5 million laws. Now, Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men in Acts 5, verse 29, and Congress said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. And our Supreme Court has said that there is a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country, and that is loyalty to God. Well, you know, every authority is in agreement. Congress, the Supreme Court, and God Almighty Himself. The Scripture is the final authority on law. Now, if you'd like to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and how to use them against government intrusion into your God-given rights, it's a duty, it's a right, it's an obligation that we owe to ourselves, our families, and our society. And I teach all 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments, along with the penalties that go along with the violation of these laws, and I do that twice a year here at the law school. Now, why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise this year? And the First Amendment, remember, is the gateway to the Second Amendment and indeed to your whole Bill of Rights. And the law of God may be old, but it's not old-fashioned and it's very relevant to our lives and to our rights today. Now, if you'd like to learn more about the law of God and the law of the state, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law School is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you can't come to school, we'll take the school to you. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Democracy. Democracy in the Bible almost sounds sacrilegious, doesn't it? George Bush is advocating democracy. He wants to sell democracy to the Iraqis. He wants to sell democracy to the people of the Middle East. He wants to sell democracy to the North Koreans and anybody else in the world that wants to listen or wants to buy it. We Americans have bought it. Our founding fathers never had a good word slip from between their lips concerning democracy. They called it mob rule and mobocracy. They called it every name but white. And yet, our public officials today talk about democracy like it was an established fact in our Constitution and Bill of Rights. Now, I'm not opposed to democracy any more than I'm opposed to communism. If people want to practice communism, they certainly have a right to do that. And people worldwide are practicing communists, and more power to them. I just don't want them enforcing their communist political ideologies off on me. I'm not opposed to them doing that if that's what they so desire. Well, democracy fits right along with this concept of communism. Yeah, communism. Communism and democracy go hand in hand. Our founding fathers gave us a republican form of government. That's why it's called the Republic. And for some reason, we got tired of this Republican form of government and decided to change it. But it isn't anything new in human history, because we Israelites not only hate God, hate the scripture, and hate the law of God, we love democracy. We love communism. We practice communism, and we practice democracy. And democracy was first tested in the Bible in the days of Moses. Believe it or not, you can read this story. It's in Numbers chapter 16. I thought I'd bring it to your attention, because George Bush has been advocating and promoting democracy for the Iraqis. He's been promoting and advocating democracy for everybody. I mean, George Bush is the main champion of democracy worldwide. Now, not everybody in the Middle East wants to buy into democracy. And then Americans, we sit over here wringing our hands and wondering, oh my God, I can't understand why these poor fools in the Middle East, Iraq and Iran and Saudi Arabia, don't want democracy. Why, we have a duty, we have a God-given duty to espouse, to deliver, to enforce. And if need be, we'll go to war and kill people to give them what we know they need. And that's democracy. Kind of reminds me of Catholicism. Back in the Middle Ages, you know, the Catholics were good people, as they are today, good people. And they have a belief, and they believe that Catholicism is the way to salvation. And in order for people to be saved, they had to be Catholics. And so they would take Protestants, and they'd lock them up in barns and buildings, and then burn them alive, men, women, and children, to save them. To save them from themselves, because they were going to hell, and so they had to purge their sins, and so they burned them. They called that the Inquisition. Frankly, I would just prefer that the Catholics just leave me alone. Let me go to hell all by myself. And I'm sure that the people in the Middle East would just assume that Americans just go to hell themselves and leave us alone and let us just wallow in the mire of tyranny all by ourselves and just leave democracy out of the equation. But of course, we Americans are evangelists, and we're not going to have any of that. So we're going to spread democracy all over the world. But democracy, if you think about it for a minute, may not be the best form of government. I know it's heretical here in America to say democracy may not be the best form of government. And I say that because if democracy were the best form of government, don't you think that God Almighty, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, would have thunk that out and given us democracy in the Scripture? You know, there should be a chapter or two somewhere in the Bible that says, now let me tell you about voting and about how you select your leaders. The people back in Moses' day, did you think that Moses was running for political office and that he got his office as the head over Israel, the friend of God? Do you think he got that by being voted in on the Republican or Democratic tickets? It seemed to me that Moses was selected at the burning bush by God himself. There was an election, I don't deny that, but the people didn't have anything to do with it, and there wasn't any vote taken. In fact, when you read the story about Moses, the people were constantly at odds with Moses, and they wanted to take him out and stone him and kill him. They didn't like Moses at all. Moses was less popular among the Israelites than George Bush is among the Americans. George Bush's approval rating is 45%. I don't think Moses ever had a 10% approval rating in the entire 40 years that he led the Israelites. And if he did, could you show me that in the Bible, where Moses was so popular that people were just picking him up and raising him up, you know, like the coach of the Super Bowl team, and carrying him on their shoulders and saying, oh, Moses, lead us into the promised land. Can you show me that? Well, over here in Numbers chapter 16 is quite a story. It's a story about democracy. It's a story about government. It's a story about raw political power. And it starts off by saying Korah, K-O-R-A-H. Now, Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Pelath, sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. These guys were the Arlen Specters and the Ted Kennedys and Hillary Clintons of their day. They were the men of renown. They were the people that everybody knew. These are the leaders. These are the local people. I mean, these are the people, you know, that run your city council and run your state governments, the governors, you know, one thing and another. In America, we have men of renown. People that are in the news all the time. People that are on the Lehr News Hour being interviewed, you know, by Jim Lehr and the various correspondents, senators and representatives, scientists, academians, men of renown. Well, Korah and these men of renown rose up and they went into Moses. They had something to tell him, boy. So they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation. Famous. Fame. Men of renown. They gathered themselves together against Moses. Hey, they didn't come in here for an audience. They gathered themselves against Moses. This was the loyal opposition. This was the Democratic minority. And we're in here to represent the people. We're in here to talk about political power against Moses and against Aaron. And they said unto them, "You take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Eternal is among them. Wherefore, then lift you up yourselves above the congregation of the Eternal." Hey, Moses, what makes you think that you should have all the power? Now, Moses was kind of shocked at this behavior. He hadn't seen this before. And you need to understand that Moses, you know, was not a Democrat. If anything, Moses was a conservative Republican. Moses had been raised in the court, in the house, in the royal family of Egypt. He was born of a slave family. He was a Levite. He was an Israelite. Moses was not a Jew. Moses was a Levite. The Levites represented 1/12 of the house of Israel. The Jews represented 1/12 of the house of Israel, as did Levi and Simeon and Reuben. And, you know, there were 12 families in Israel. The Jews don't represent everybody, just one family. Moses was not a Jew. Moses was not of that family. But he was born a slave, and he was raised by the Egyptians. So he was pretty knowledgeable about Egyptian law, pretty knowledgeable about Egyptian religion, law, politics, power. And Moses was not a Democrat. Moses was a patrician, as they would say in Greece. He was of the royal family. He was the royal cut. And it fit right into his character and right into his program to be the head over the Israelites, to be selected by God, to be a king. Which indeed, he wasn't a king, but he was sitting in that office. He was the leader over Israel. And here comes Korah and his gang, 250 men of renown, and they came and gathered themselves against Moses. They didn't come in there and say, "Well, now Moses, let's talk." They came in there and they said, "Hey, you take too much on yourself. Who do you think you are, Moses?" So in verse 4, he said, Moses heard it, and he fell on his face. And he spake unto Korah and all the company, saying, "Even tomorrow the Lord will show who were his and who was holy. And he'll cause him to come near unto him, even him whom he has chosen will he cause to come near to him." So Moses told Korah, he said, "Well, we better take this to God himself and let God decide, let God hold an election and decide, well, between you and me, between Aaron and myself and the 250 princes of Israel, who it is that should have all the political power." So he said, "This do, you take censers, Korah, and all of his company, and you put fire therein, and you put incense in them before the Eternal. And tomorrow it shall be that the man whom the Lord doth choose he shall be holy. You take too much upon you, you sons of Levi. And Moses said to Korah, Hear, I pray you, you sons of Levi, seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel, to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Eternal, and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them. And he has brought you near to him, and all of your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you, and seek you the priesthood also. For which cause both you and all of your company are gathered together against the Eternal, and what is therein that you murmur against him? So Moses had something to say about it. He said, Now listen, you know, God has selected you Levites, Korah, and all of you people over here, to do the service of God. Today we call the people that do the service of the government the civil service today. Is it a small thing that you people are the policemen, the firemen, the mayors, and the city council, that you people are the infrastructure of governmental operations? So Korah already had power. The Levitical priesthood, in reality, boys and girls, was the civil service of society. They collected the taxes. They fixed the potholes in the road and built the bridges and delivered the mail. And this guy Korah, you know, and his gang comes over to Moses and says, Hey, you know, we think we ought to have a little more power than this. Kind of like the NEA coming in and saying, Well, hey, we think we ought to run the school board too. So Moses said, Look, why don't we gather tomorrow and we'll let God choose? You know, maybe you got a point there, partner. Or pilgrim, as John Wayne would say. Pilgrim, maybe you got a point there. Maybe we ought to let God choose. Maybe Korah should take over the place of Moses, and maybe I ought to go out here and fill potholes and get my truck out here and my shovel and go out here and fix the highway. So Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which said, We will not come up. And he said, Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of the land of, or the land that flows with milk and honey, to kill us in the wilderness, except you make yourself altogether a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into the land that flows with milk and honey, or given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. Now Moses was very wroth, and he said unto the Eternal, he said to God, Respect not thou their offering. I have not taken one ass from them, neither have I hurt one of them. I haven't taken any bribes. I haven't been on the take. I don't work for Halliburton. Moses was being put on the spot here. He was being challenged. His authority was being challenged. Now, Moses didn't have the power to take these people into the promised land. He was actually working for God, and God had told him, you know, you tell these people to do this and do that and do something else, and Moses went out and told them. And then it was God that was a little slow on the delivery end. It wasn't Moses. I'm sure that Moses would have delivered right away if he could have, but God is a little slow on delivery. It's one of the perks and prerequisites, I guess, that you get with following the law of God. He's not very punctual. And these people had been out in the wilderness now for several months, and they hadn't been delivered to the promised land. They were promised the land of milk and honey. They weren't there yet. And they were getting a little bit uppity about it. They were getting a little bit tense. So Moses said to Korah, he said, Be thou and all of your company before the Eternal, you and they and Aaron tomorrow. And you take every man his censer, and you put incense in them, and bring it before the Eternal, every man his censer, 250 censers, you also and Aaron, each of you, his censer. And they took every man his censer, and they put fire in them, and they laid incense therein, and stood in the door of the tabernacle of the congregation with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all of the congregation against them. Gathered all the congregation. I mean, you got 3.5 million people out here. These 250 princes, they've been out here organizing. They've been out here stirring up a little hate and discontent. And saying, hey, listen, this government over here, this Moses guy over here, you know, he's an enemy. He promised to take us into a land of milk and honey, and he hasn't done it yet. we need a new political regime. We need a change here. Government, almost like election time, isn't it? We need an election. We're going to vote Moses out. So the Eternal spoke unto Moses and Aaron, saying, now here's God, comes to Moses, and he says, you separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. That's verse 21. You'll see that written here in the books of Moses, that is Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the four books of Moses. You'll see that written five or six times, where God just had it right up to his eyeballs, and he says, Moses, get the hell out of the way. I'm going to take this whole 3.5 million Israelites, these belly achers, and I'll consume them in a moment, and I will raise up after you. I'll take your children, and I'll make a great nation out of you. And Moses, time after time, interceded for the Israelites and said, now, wait a minute, God, now hang on. You know, don't blow a cork here. Don't fly off the handle. Relax. It's going to be okay. And he interceded for us. The only reason that you and I are here today is because Moses interceded several times on behalf of the Israelites, of which, you know, you and I are descendants. Otherwise, it would be Moses and his children instead of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their children. Kind of like Noah. You know, all of us are descended from Noah. Before Noah, there were lots of families in the earth. They were all wiped out. There are no descendants outside of Noah prior to the flood. None of those descendants, none of those people are alive today. None of their descendants. All of us came from Noah. One line. God was proposing, hey, we'll rebuild a new nation. We'll call it the nation of Moses. Instead of the descendants of Abraham, we'll wipe them all out. Moses would be the only descendant of Abraham, and we'd be descended from him. Now think of that. That's pretty heavy duty. In verse 22, and they fell on their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be wroth with all the congregation? There's Moses interceding for us. Verse 23, the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you speak unto the congregation, saying, get you up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Moses rose up and went unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed them. And he spoke unto the congregation, saying, you depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all of their sins. Now, Moses identified this as rebellion. And he said, now look, boys and girls, pack up and depart from and get the hell away from these evil men. He called them wicked. Now, I don't think that Arlen Specter and Ted Kennedy and Hillary Clinton and Bill Frisk, you know, and all these politicians see themselves as being wicked and evil. I think they see themselves as being holy and righteous, representing God himself. That's the way Korah saw it. And they allied themselves, and they said, this Moses takes too much upon himself. He's an autocrat, an oligarch. Who elected Moses? Who chose you, Moses? Who made you to be a prince over us? That's what they said to him. Who has selected you to be a prince over us? So they got up from the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram on every side. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the door of their tents, and their wives and their sons and their little children. And Moses said, hereby you shall know that the Eternal has sent me to do all of these works. Moses said to these wicked guys, you know, these Democrats, he said, now listen, boys and girls, get your wives and your children over here. Pay attention now. Listen up. Let me tell you the story. And he told them, he said, we're going to have an election here. We're going to have a selection here, and God himself is going to be the one voting party. democracy a little bit differently than we conceive it here in America. See, we have these big elections and all the people go out here and they vote. If the people could have voted for Korah or Moses, Korah would have been elected hands down. Absolutely hands down. The people hated Moses. They absolutely despised him. His public opinion polls were lower than George Bush. I can't think of anybody with a low opinion poll. Well, I guess it was Tricky Dick, wasn't it? Why Moses, compared to Dick Nixon, Richard Nixon, would have been lower than Richard Nixon in the middle of Watergate. Now, that's not a very popular politician, now, is it? Politicians like to be popular. They like to be well-liked. So, Moses said, "Hereby you shall know that the Eternal has sent me to do all of these works." And God is going to do, "For I have not done them of my own mind." Moses told him, he said, "Now listen, all of these ideas, you know, coming out of Egypt and coming across the Red Sea and coming out here into the wilderness, and, you know, none of this came from my mind. I didn't dream this up. I'm just following instructions. I'm just telling you what it is that God has told me to tell you." Verse 29, "If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Eternal has not sent me." If these guys die of old age, God hasn't sent me. Now, you know, if you were Korah, you ever stop and think of yourself, you know, in this jam over here, what if you were Korah? And Moses had said, "If you die of old age, partner, pilgrim, then God has not sent me." So in verse 30 here, "But if the Eternal make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Eternal." Now here comes the test. How would you like to be on that side of the test? You boys die of old age, and you'll know God hasn't sent me. If the earth opens up and swallows you people alive, then you'll know that God has sent me. Now, this is going to be an election, and it's going to be an election for 3.5 million people to see. When this election is over, when the selection process is complete, the people aren't going to vote. It's God Almighty who's going to vote. And he's going to vote for Korah and his gang of 250 men of renown, the people that are famous in the congregation, or vote for Moses. Moses, who was reviled and hated and despised by everybody. Well, save for two or three. I mean, Moses had his followers. You know, he had three or four guys that were on his side. His brother Aaron, Joshua, and a couple others. Moses was about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party. Now, I'll just give you an idea as to how popular Moses was. So at verse 31, "It came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all of these words, that the ground clave asunder and was under them," or that was under them, "the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up in their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah and all of their goods. They and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. And all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. And there came out a fire from the Eternal and consumed the 250 men that offered incense." So, get the picture here. You know, God had said, Moses had told Korah, he said, "Okay, well, God's going to select, you know, he's going to choose between you and me. You 250 guys get over on one side of this little valley here, and we'll get over on the other side. And you put fire in your censers, and we'll put fire in our censers. And if you guys live and die of old age, you'll know that God hasn't sent us. But if the earth opens up and swallows you people, then you'll know the election's over." Now, this is kind of a bloody election, isn't it? When it's all said and done, we're going to have some selection over here, but there isn't going to be any loyal opposition. There isn't going to be any re-election. There isn't going to be 4 years from now an opportunity for you to run for office again. You know, Moses was selected for life. Moses died at 120 years old. And from 80 to 120, for 40 years, Moses was selected by God to be their leader. And they didn't have any elections. I mean, there wasn't any, you're in office for 4 years and then you're out of office. Nobody voted for Moses and nobody voted against him. He was selected by God Almighty himself. And when Korah and his gang came in there and said, now listen, we think you're taking too much upon yourself over here, seeing how we're all holy. We all have equal rights here. Equal rights. Hey, we all have equal rights. Well, that was the story that Korah had. Now hang on, we got to take a break and we'll be right back with more on democracy in the Bible. Now you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, for more information, why don't you go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. Now remember, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School direct. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967 to order yours. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Okay, we're talking about democracy in the Bible, democracy in ancient times. God describes himself in the Bible as being a king. He calls himself the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So he's a monarch. We'll take a look at this monarchical or king form of government here a little later in 1 Samuel chapter 8. A little later on, after this experiment in democracy was set aside out here in the wilderness. This is before they got into the Promised Land. Now they've left Egypt. They've crossed the Red Sea. They're camped out here in the wilderness. In fact, they've been locked out here now for 40 years is what's happened here. Remember, they wouldn't go into the Promised Land when they were told to. And so God said, well, you people can just cool your heels out here for 40 years. And you people can die and your carcasses will be consumed in the wilderness and I'll take your children into the Promised Land. That's the way that deal came down. Well, while they were out there, they got a little bit uppity and they said, what we need is a new form of government. We're dissatisfied with the party in power. So they had an election. And they came up against Moses and they said, hey, listen, you take too much upon yourself. These were the men of renown. These were the people that were somebody in the nation, people that were looked up to. So now they've just been consumed. The ground opened up and swallowed them all up. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, said, you speak unto Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, that he take up censers out of the burning and scatter you the fire yonder, because they're hallowed. And the censers of these sinners against their own souls, let them make them broad plates for a covering of the altar, for they offered them before the Eternal, wherefore they are hallowed, and they shall be a sign unto the children of Israel. And Eleazar the priest took the brazen censers, wherefore, or wherewith, they that were burnt had offered, and they were made broad plates for a covering of the altar, to be a memorial unto the children of Israel, that no stranger which is not of the seed of Aaron come near to offer incense before the Eternal, that he be not as Korah and as his company, as the Eternal said to him by the hand of Moses. Now remember, there were some members here of the French. Let me just back up here. In verse 1, it says, and Eliab, E-L-I-A-B, and On, the son of Pelath, sons of Reuben, took men. See, we do the same thing here in the United States. We've got a civil service. Our civil service is not made up of Levites. It's made up of Joe Sixpack and anybody else that can come in here and claim that they want to work for the government. Under this system, only the sons of Levi could participate, and all of those that were not sons of Levi had come to offer strange fire. So only Levites can serve God in the civil service and the Levitical priesthood, and anybody else that claims to be a Levite and isn't a Levite is walking on shaky ground. That's why I always tell people, don't send me your tithes, boys and girls. I'm not a Levite. Far be it from me to come out here and usurp the power of Moses or usurp the power of the Levites. You got preachers running all over America today collecting tithes. Are those people Levites? Do they have any right to the tithe? And mull that one over a little bit. I'm not sure that all you preachers out there have the power, have the authority to assume this office. So on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, you have killed the people of the Eternal. This is verse 41. Did you get that? Now let's recapitulate here. 250 princes, 250 of the loyal opposition come to Moses and say, Moses, you've taken too much upon yourself. Moses says, okay, take your censers. You get on one side of the valley. We'll get on the other side and God will choose. Moses said to him, if you guys die of old age, God has not chosen me. If you guys die when the ground opens up and swallows you alive, then all of you people are going to know that God has selected me. All right. The ground opens up, swallows them up, kills them all. And what do the Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives, what do the voters, what do the common people think of this? The common people said, you have killed the people of the Eternal. Now listen to what God has to say about that. And it came to pass when the congregation was gathered against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tabernacle of the congregation, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Eternal appeared. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of the congregation. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them as in a moment. Now that's the second time in this event. The first time, remember, we talked about that, was in verse 21. Separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them in a moment. Then after the election is complete, the people say, why, we're not satisfied with this election. We don't like it. And for the second time, God said, now look, Moses, back off. Get the hell out of the road and let me consume these people. So Moses, you know, here comes Moses again. He fell on his face. And Moses said unto Aaron, take a censer and put fire therein from off the altar, and put on incense, and go quickly unto the congregation, and make an atonement for them. For there is wrath gone out from the Eternal. The plague is begun. Now here comes a plague upon the entire congregation. 3.5 million people. So Aaron took... as Moses commanded, and he ran into the midst of the congregation, and behold, the plague was begun among the people, and he put on incense and made an atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stayed. Now they that died in the plague were 14,700, besides them that died about the matter of Korah. And Aaron returned unto Moses, unto the door of the tabernacle and the congregation, and the plague was stayed. God was going to consume 3.5 million people. Moses and Aaron interceded again. Said, now wait a minute, God, now don't fly off the handle now. Bounce off the walls. I'm telling you, you know, the people didn't like Moses at all. What they wanted was a government more of their choosing. You know, a government, as George Bush says, which is kinder and gentler. A kinder and gentler government. We Israelites have never been happy with our God. Now, the Gentiles are pretty happy with their gods. The Muslims are happy with Allah. And the Buddhists are happy with Buddha, and the Shintoists are happy with Shinto, and Confucianists are happy with Confucius. It's we Americans and British and French and all of us Anglo-Saxons, Australians and Canadians, we're just not happy with our God at all. We've never been very happy with him. We don't like his law. We don't like the program that was set up out at Mount Sinai. We've rebelled against that from day one. And you read that story over here in 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8. Just be patient with me. It takes me a minute to find it over here. Because see, I'm not a real preacher. I'm just a pretender. That's why I always tell people about meat cutting. You know, I'm not a real butcher, you know. I'm just a pretender. I can cut meat, but I'm not a butcher. So over here in 1 Samuel chapter 8, there's a little story here about Samuel's sons, about 300 years after Moses. Remember, Moses lived about 1300 B.C. In fact, they left Egypt in 1327 B.C., and Moses, you know, was their leader for about 40 years. So they're out in the wilderness there 40 years. And then about 300 years after Moses died, takes us down to around, you know, 1000 to 1100 BC in that century. And there was a system that God had ordained there called a system of judges. In fact, there's a book in the Bible which is called Judges. And Samson was a judge, and there were a number of judges. Joshua was a judge, and there was a succession of these judges, and finally they got down to the last judge in Israel. His name was Samuel, and the reason I say he was the last judge in Israel, it's because the people were not happy with the system of judges. They didn't like it. They didn't like the government under Moses. They didn't like the government under God. They didn't like the government under the judges. And they wanted a change. And they came to Samuel and they said, we want a king like all the nations around us. And God told them, he said, now listen, boys and girls, this isn't going to be one of your brighter days in history. You know, this is pretty serious business when you go to change your government. When you go to change your king, because when you change your king, you change your law. When you change your king, you change your law. You know, when we changed from King George back in 1776, that was a pretty heady moment in history. Because when you change from King George to something else, you're going to change your law at the same time. Are you really sure that you want to do that? Now, the Canadians up there, they made a change, you know, from King George to parliamentary democracy up there in Canada, but they didn't have a bloody revolution in the process. They were a little more patient when it was all said and done, you know. Of course, they still got the Queen comes over once in a while, you know, and talks about the Commonwealth and a few good things, but by and large, they avoided that bloody revolution that we went through here, you know, in 1776 through 1783. Well, anyway, here's the story. Samuel is the last judge. Samuel's a pretty good guy. Now, the people aren't too distressed with this guy Samuel, but they don't like the form of government. Listen to this. It came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his first son was Joel, the name of his second Abiam. They were judges in Beersheba. Now his sons walked not in his ways, but they turned aside after lucre, and they took bribes, and they perverted judgment. They were just normal, everyday, garden-variety politicians, you know, just like the politicians we have today, taking campaign contributions. Lobbyists, you know, coming along here. And so they turned aside after lucre. They took bribes. They perverted judgment. I mean, you could sleep in the Lincoln bedroom with these guys. I mean, you could come in here and make campaign contributions and get the ear of the president. Well, at least you could get the ear of these two judges. So Samuel's two boys were not, you know, the greatest politicians in the land, and the people weren't too happy with them. They didn't have these complaints against Samuel. They had these complaints against Samuel's sons. And of course, you know, you're going to say, well, you know, how come Samuel didn't clean up his house? Well, it could be that he didn't know about it. Could be. I don't know if he knew about it or not. Now, when Aaron's two boys got a little uppity, God killed his two sons. Remember that? So when God has an election, it usually is bloody and violent. When God makes a selection, it's typically pretty bloody and violent. It is not kind and gentle. And that's what happened with Aaron's two boys. He killed them both. So what happened here with Korah and his gang, he's killed them all. So when God gets through with the election, there's the living and the dead. The living and the dead. You ought to be thankful that we don't have that kind of election here in the United States. Because you'd have George Bush and then you'd have John Kerry. George Bush and then you'd have the dead. So the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and they came to Samuel unto Ramah. And they said to him, behold, you're old and your sons walk not in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. They said, hey, we want a government like everybody else around us. And today it's democracy. I mean, you know, the form of government that is popular today is democracy. We want a democracy. Well, in those days, you know, kingdoms were pretty popular. And so the people said, hey, make us a king. We want a king like all the nations around us. We want to have a normal form of government. This theocracy with God over here isn't very normal. We don't like it. So the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us, and Samuel prayed to the Eternal. He prayed to God. And God said to Samuel, well, hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. So here's God telling you, boys and girls, you haven't rejected, you know, you're not rejecting Samuel, you're rejecting me, God. You don't want me. You're not rejecting Moses, you're rejecting me. Now, you'd think God would have an inferiority complex after all this rejection. And he gets a little bit personal about it, and he says, you know, get out of the way there, Moses, and I'll just consume all these people and kill them all. You know, fortunately, Moses interceded for us a time or two. Now, the people say they want a king in verse 7. Now, we're in 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8. This chapter relates the most significant geopolitical change in the history of Israel. In our history. Boys and girls, there's been nothing like this. Never before. Not even the change from King George to the Republic in 1776 equals this change right here. Nothing's been the same among our people from this day forward. So you might as well understand how this geopolitical change affects you today. Today in 2005. So in verse 8, according to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto you. Now religious people today think of serving other gods as being, you know, changing your religious affiliation, you know, like it's a, you know, it's like a Catholic changing to Protestantism, or it's a Jew converting to Buddhism, you know, like Goldie Hawn. No, that's not the gist of this story. This story has to do with politics, not religion. And serving other gods is just like the United States of America. Now, people today, you know, they line up to get a passport. They line up to get a driver's license. People today want to worship their God, the United States of America, and California, Washington, and Oregon. And they do. We reject God, and we reject the laws of God, and we create our own. We put our princes into power. You know, princes like Princess Hillary and Prince, you know, Ireland and Prince Ted Kennedy. And those guys make our laws for us. All 2.5 million of them. Yeah, that's right. 2.5 million laws. God gave us 759 laws and people hate them. You know, laws like thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not commit adultery. That's the one that really ticks people off. Thou shalt not commit adultery. You know, people don't like that. People's attitude is, what I do in the bedroom is my business and God can just get his nose out. You know, like sodomy laws. You know, we got consenting adults over here, and what we consenting adults decide is moral and good is what we're going to do. So, verse 9, he says, therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that's going to reign over them. He says, give them this message from me. So Samuel told all the words of the Eternal unto the people that asked of him a king, and he said, this is going to be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. All right, boys and girls, now listen up. Here's what you got in Washington, D.C. today. This is what you've got in Albany, New York, and Sacramento, California. Now listen up. Here's what you're going to get. Here's what you got. He'll take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. And these are your sons and daughters in Iraq, boys and girls, serving in the military-industrial complex. He'll appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and he'll set them to ear his ground and reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and instruments for his chariots. This is the Lockheed Martins and the Boeing aircrafts. These are the Halliburtons, boys and girls. And you can support those institutions of the military-industrial complex with your tax dollars. And he'll take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers. 80% of your women will be out here working in the marketplace over here to pay your mortgages and to pay your bills. And he'll take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards and even the best of them and give it to his servants. You can have a Department of Agriculture and you can have a bureaucracy like the IRS and the EPA and OSHA that will consume and tax and fine and take away from you your property. And he'll take the tenth of your seed in your vineyards and give it to his officers and his servants. He'll create a bureaucracy called the Internal Revenue Service. And he'll take your taxes and take your money and he will oppress you and impoverish you. And if you give him any SH, he'll throw your you know what in the slammer. And you can spend a little time in prison. And he'll take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. And there's your military industrial complex in conjunction with the government. He will take, that is, your president, George W. Bush, and the Republican Party will give you Homeland Security and the Patriot Act and stick it up your hind end sideways. I mean, these aren't very pleasant political events now, boys and girls, now are they? Now, God warned our forefathers, you know, about 80 generations ago, a generation being about 40 years now, about 80 generations ago, he said, now listen, boys and girls, listen up good, because this is not one of your better decisions. Let me tell you what's going to happen. Now, listen to what our forefathers said. Our forefathers. He said to Samuel, you go out here and tell these people now for me. You tell them what this king, what this new government, what this new force is going to do to them. He's going to take the tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. There'll be a guardian ward relationship here, boys and girls, in which your politicians are going to be your masters, are going to be your guardians. And they're going to tell you when to come in and when to go out and what to do in between. Now, that's where you're at today. At least here in the United States, I can't speak for you people around the world, but let me tell you, that's the way it is here in the United States. We got a master-servant relationship with our government, with our democratically elected politicians. And in verse 18, he said, "You will cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you." This democratic process, the king that you choose, not the king that I choose, not a Moses that I'm going to select, but the king that you elect, the king that you choose, you Democrats and Republicans out there, you conservatives and laborites. And the Eternal will not hear you in that day. So that's why I was telling my students, I come in here, now if you want to pray to God about the government that's oppressing you over here, you can save your breath. Save your breath. You don't need to pray to Jesus about George Bush. You don't need to pray to Jesus about the Patriot Act, or Homeland Security, or the IRS, the EPA, or the tax system, or the military-industrial complex. He said, "I will not hear you." He's already told you, I ain't listening to this crap. You want to be Democrats? Get after it. That's why I always say, oh, Moses was a Republican. But he wasn't a George Bush Republican, I'll assure you that. Nevertheless, verse 19, the people refused to obey the voice of the Eternal and said, "Nay, but we will have a king over us." Now, after all of this, after God himself came up and said, "Hey, listen, boys and girls, let me tell you what's coming down." The people said, "Nevertheless, we will have a king to rule over us." Okay. Got to give God credit where credit's due. He said, "Okay, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, boys and girls. But I don't think this is going to work out for you the way you have it envisioned." Now, you had your choice between John Kerry here in America and George Bush, and you made your choice. Somebody said, "Why, we didn't have any choice." Well, sure, there was four or five other candidates on the ballot. How come you didn't vote for one of these other candidates? You know, if democracy is such a good program over here, why don't you people elect the good government that you think that you're entitled to? If democracy works and if democracy is such a good program, how come you just don't vote in the good government that you all desire? The truth of the matter is you cannot vote in or vote out your government. That's the bottom line. You go out and vote, but you can't get the government that you want and desire by voting. And that's what's wrong with democracy. Now, God says he's a king. He's not a Democrat. He's not a Republican. And he's not promoting democracy. He calls himself the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He's a despotic ruler. Despotic ruler. And he's not very kind and gentle either. All right, we're about out of time, boys and girls. We'll have to leave it right there. It's been a pleasure being with you again this week. Keep in mind that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's the signal. It says time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing, of course. Same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.